Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt from California. I'm John Manuel from World Headquarters here in Durham, North Carolina. Thanks for downloading us, whether it's on iTunes or at baseballamerica.com. Aaron, let's just dive right in. Third week of the college baseball season, the Division I season. First loss of the season for our number one preseason team, Florida, but the Gators remain number one, sweeping the U. Correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, this is the first time they've ever swept the U at home?
Correct, and just the second time they've ever swept Miami at all. They had done it once before in Coral Gables, I believe in 2006.
And obviously they lost a midweek to Florida State, so a big rivalry week for the Gators. And Florida State beat Florida last year in Omaha, eliminated them from the College World Series, if I remember correctly. They lost, I guess, the first game to UCLA. But despite the fact that Florida State has had the upper hand head-to-head, let's talk a little bit about how Florida, which has historically been well behind Miami and Florida State in terms of national championships. Obviously, Miami has four. The other schools do not have any. And then College World Series trips. But it sounds, from our vantage point, it seems like Florida is just, if you had to pick a program in that state right now, it's Florida, is it not? I mean, not just this team, but a program.
Yeah, I think it's the healthiest program. I mean, you know, and Florida State's very healthy, and Miami's doing fine. But, I mean, Florida's just a well-oiled machine right now. You know, they're really, you know, they're catching breaks with recruiting guys. They're doing a great job recruiting, but they're getting all their high-profile targets, which is key. I mean, you know, Carson Wentz, let's face it, that's a break to get that guy. You know, that's not a guy that you bank on getting. So they've gotten a little bit lucky, but they've just done a great job. And I'll tell you, when Pat McMahon was sent packing over there several years back, I thought it was a shame. I thought it was unfair for a guy who had been in the national title series just a year or two earlier. But Kevin O'Sullivan and his staff, I mean, what can you say? They've got that thing really humming along.
Yeah, you can't take anything away from that program because, like you said, I mean, it's a little bit of a lucky break to get Carson Whitson, but the year before it was just top 200 guy for top 200 guy. And, you know, Mike Zanino and Brian Johnson and those guys were well-regarded, but they weren't even the top guys. I mean, like Austin Maddox and Michael Heller were the top-rated guys in their 2000 their class, the guys who were freshmen last year, sophomores this year. It's really been, you know, the good college players, like a Nolan Fontana, and you know, not a guy that anybody was going to try to draft and sign out of high school that makes that program go. And it's just impressive to see that team bolt from the gates. And it's, you know, surprising to see the U. Obviously, we had a preseason top 25 team. Obviously, health issues with Coach Morris. So we wish Jim Morris a speedy recovery. Was it gallbladder surgery?
Yeah, that's right. And then I guess there was an infection after that. So it took him, I think he ended up missing six games, but he'll be back on the field today.
And, you know, none too soon because the U is 5-6. And this is not the 2008 Hurricanes. It's a good Hurricanes team, but not a loaded ball club. I'll tell you a club that is loaded right now, Aaron. Obviously Florida and Vanderbilt 1-2, but Oklahoma moving up to third in our third week rankings. And obviously the Sooners were expected to be good. What were they, fifth in our preseason rankings?
I believe fifth or sixth. I think fifth, yeah.
And the Sooners were in Omaha last year. I think, you know, all the props in the world for them going on the road, winning a Super Regional at a very talented and experienced UVA team that had been to Omaha the year before. Oklahoma went on the road and just flat out beat that team on the field. So nothing fluky about the Sooners going to Omaha last year. They return a lot of the same guys this year, Aaron, and while that team is not loaded with pro prospects, that team is about as complete as any college team in the country. And right now, this past weekend, it seemed like it was really a big, I don't want to say statement, but it was the best competition they faced all year, and they brushed it aside.
Yeah, they did great. And, you know, we always talk about how difficult it is for teams to travel all, you know, halfway across the country or make those long road trips to the West Coast. That's a challenge, you know. You have to get used to the different style of play, and the, you know, the travel, you know, takes its toll, but they handled it very well. They beat a very good Cal team. You know, they beat good pitching from USD. I mean, they saw Dylan Covey. He's got a great arm, and they beat him. Michael Rocha, I believe, was one who beat him, and Michael Rocha was a key guy for Oklahoma, their senior right-hander, the guy that they kind of thought would be their Blake Cooper this year, and he's been outstanding. You know, I think he's got a sub-1 ERA right now. You know, it's 88 to 90 with all kinds of sync. I talked to Coach Galloway yesterday, and you know, he was singing Roach's praises. Bobby Shore, I mean, it's, you know, other than Birch Smith, they don't have a big, you know, flamethrower kind of arm in the rotation, but they've got a bunch of guys who compete and win. And we know their offense is outstanding. I think they're hitting .381 as a team right now, firing on all cylinders. It's certainly built around Garrett Buchel, but they've got a deep core of veterans there and guys who just believe in what they can do and haven't let the new bats slow them down at all.
Yeah, bats, what new bats? They have 17 home runs. Their opponents have 3. They're slugging .592. I mean, it's been a show. And again, William & Mary is a good program, not a great program, but a good program. Yes, there's some Arkansas Pine Bluff and some Oakland in there. But UT Arlington, San Diego State, San Diego, and Cal over the weekend. And San Diego State's off to a tough start, but they pitch, and they usually pitch. They're usually pretty good on the mound, and whether they have Strasburg or not. And this is just amazing how Oklahoma, to me, it was very impressive how they went down there and just dominated. You know, speaking of that Big 12, Aaron, one thing we didn't talk about that we might talk about on the show, but when we did our preseason All-America team and our video that Connor Glassy put together, we were all a little bit like, wow, you know, Taylor Youngman does not look as smooth as these other pitchers. But is there a pitcher who's pitched better this year than Taylor Youngman? And what was your impression of seeing the Longhorns on Sunday as you got a chance to see part of that Texas-Stanford series?
I think you could throw Danny Holson's name into the mix with his 34-1 strikeout walk ratio or whatever it is he's got. You know, Holson and Youngman, I think those have been the best two guys out there in the country this year. And there's been a lot of good pitchers, but those two guys are right at the top for me. You know, Youngman, it's interesting. I was talking about him with some scouts this weekend, and everyone seems to like his mechanics just fine. Nobody's really got any concerns there. He seems like a pretty safe bet to a lot of these scouts to be a big league starter, you know, a mid-rotation guy at least, and maybe a number two type guy in the big leagues. I mean, he's just a really good competitor, and he's been outstanding. He beat Mark Appel in Stanford on Friday, proved a 3-0. I think that Texas team, you know, I think they're going to be pretty good. I mean, I think that they're going to prevent a lot of runs like they always do. I saw them on Sunday, against Stanford, and Sam Stafford pitched very well for Texas. Corey Knebel has emerged in the bullpen, a freshman right-hander, kind of out of nowhere, a guy whose name wasn't really out there that much, but throws hard. You know, he was up to 93 or so on Sunday. Supposedly he was up to 96 in Hawaii, according to Augie Garrido. And he's fearless. He's just another Texas arm. They've got tons of arms. They need to play more consistent defense because they really haven't actually defended at a great level. They made 5 errors on Saturday in that 9-2 loss. But, you know, Texas usually starts a little bit slower and then finds its groove. And by conference play, they're humming along. And, you know, last year, of course, they were just a machine by the time conference play rolled around. But I think it'll be the same thing this year. You know, I mean, it takes a little while for the hitters to all settle in and get comfortable with the system. And I think by the end of the year, you know, they're not going to be a powerhouse offensive team by any means, but they're going to do enough offensively. And I think they have a pretty good chance to get back to Omaha.
I think it's funny. Every time I think of Texas' season last year, I think of probably the only two series they lost, the New Mexico series and the TCU series. And, you know, New Mexico obviously was a regional team for the first time in forever. And TCU was ridiculously good and went to Omaha, had to go through Texas to do it, and did it. But in between, like you said, Texas was a machine. And I think I undervalue what they did last year in my own head because the disappointing series are the ones that stick out to me. But is there anybody there at all concerned about the cold start that Cole Green has gotten off to? He's taken both their losses, it looks like. Well, two of their 4 losses.
Yeah, you know, Augie said that was really a mental thing, and he's out of rhythm a little bit, out of sync. He's trying to do too much, and it's affecting his timing and therefore his command. And so I think they're trying to go back to square one with them. And you know, favorite Augie Garrido catchphrase: control the controllables. They need to get him to understand that. And you know, he's a veteran guy. He's a senior. I mean, his arm's fine. He's just gotten off to a rough start, and I'm confident Skip Johnson will get that guy going again, because you know he's a winner, and I don't, you know, I think this is just a bump, a speed bump for him.
I think I need to give you an automatic plus two for control the controllables reference. I think that is like the all-time Augie Garrido reference. Yeah. So yeah, that's the one to use.
He was in rare form on Sunday, John. He was cracking jokes and waxing philosophical and just holding court there. He was in his element.
All that was missing was the cocktail, probably.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. He's of age. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and our expert, Aaron Fitt, who was around Texas this weekend. Aaron, you've already seen a lot of teams that have come to the West Coast. Now you got a chance to get into Middle America and to flyover country and see some guys out in Texas. Of course, you still chase down Stanford. And like you wrote on the you wrote on the college blog in Three Strikes that this wasn't the greatest look in the world at Stanford and Texas because they didn't play well necessarily on Sunday. I don't know. Do those feel like Omaha teams? Does Stanford feel like an Omaha team? Or is maybe next year the more reasonable expectation for the Cardinal?
I do think next year is a more reasonable expectation, but certainly that doesn't mean it can't happen this year. We've seen teams – a lot recently, get there seemingly a year ahead of schedule. You know, Virginia 2 years ago comes to mind. But this team is young and, you know, they're going to have their ups and downs, I think. And they're relying on some younger players. And I think Jake Stewart at the top of the lineup has made some progress, but he struck out four times on Sunday and at least three of them were on breaking balls, and it looks like that he's still pretty susceptible there. Austin Wilson strikes out a lot. He had two before he got yanked for a pinch hitter this weekend. Brian Regueira did look good. He was the guy that impressed me a little bit with his approach using all fields. But when you're relying on a bunch of young hitters, you're going to have your little slumps, I think, and more than a team that has a bunch of veterans. And on the mound, I think they're going to be fine. They've got lots of good arms. Seems like their roles are kind of materializing. But I think it's a very exciting team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they got hot and made a deep run. But I don't think it's a lock by any means.
And their schedule gets a little easier. Obviously, they have a 12-day break here after their three straight weekend series on the road. But after they're home to Michigan and Long Beach State the next couple weekends, and they're still starting Pac-10 on the road, Aaron, at Washington State, at USC, for their first two series in league play. And that league is lethal, as we know, which is the transition I wanted to make next. You know, last week our hot team on the podcast we talked a little bit about was Cal, which came to Myrtle Beach and annihilated three regional-caliber teams. This weekend the Bears lose three straight games. But I guess UCLA is really kind of the big news in the Pac-10 with the Bruins losing back-to-back series despite Trevor Bauer striking out 17 in 10 innings, despite Garrett Cole carrying a no-hitter for, what, seven innings against Nebraska. The Bruins still go to Nebraska, and despite their vaunted pitching delivering, they lose the series. When do we start getting concerned about the Bruins' offense, or are you already at that point?
No, I'm not concerned, and I don't think I will be. I trust in Rick Vanderhook, as I said in the chat yesterday. I just think that guy, he can really run an offense, and I think this personnel is well suited for his system. They're not going to sit back and hit three-run home runs. I mean, they're not going to hit very many home runs this year, period. Given a little bit more time, I'm pretty confident that they're going to be grinding out at bats and using the gaps and hitting line drives and, executing the small game that Vanderhook loves. They're not going to score a ton of runs, but like Texas, they're certainly going to score enough with that pitching. So no, I'm not at all worried. I do think it was a tough weekend for hitting up there. It was 33 degrees or something on Saturday. That's a factor too. I mean, I'm not making excuses for them. They haven't really hit much at all this year, but no, I'm not concerned. I mean, that team hit enough last year. Most of the key guys are back. I just think sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get into a groove, and Vanderhook will get them there.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to need that much offense. Seems like it's more going to be the timing of those runs as opposed to the volume of those runs. Have you talked to anybody who had a chance to – go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we also have a podcast question about this series from an MD Schmidt on Twitter who says that is this more a case of UCLA's poor offense or the Huskers being better than expected? And, we talked about UCLA's offense, but I think I think Nebraska is about as good as expected. I mean, we had them pegged as a regional team, number 5 in the Big 12 conference. You know, they're going to pitch pretty well. I mean, that's the strength of this team. And, you know, and like UCLA, I mean, they're going to have to grind out offense a little bit, but they did enough this weekend. So I think Nebraska is a solid club, and this is a good year for them to make a run.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good – I think it's an important point on Nebraska. It's not like they went on the road and beat a bad team. Nebraska hasn't been that great the last couple of years, but they're a better version of Nebraska this year. How much do you think, UCLA misses a guy like a Gallego who, you know, was their leading base stealer a year ago, or Blair Dunlap? Are those guys that difficult to replace? I mean, Justin Uribe, I guess, is the other regular they lost from last year's team. Or do you feel like maybe they're even more talented? It seems like on paper they're almost more talented offensively than they were last year, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, those were nice college players. Gallego in particular, he was a spark plug for them. But I think having a full healthy season of Cody Kiefer and Jeff Jelilich, I think there's more upside, honestly, with this group. They need Pat Veleka to get going for one thing. You know, shortstop. He was a guy that they knew he was going to be more of a steady defender type shortstop, get occasional hits, but he hit some in the fall. You know, I mean, he sprayed the ball around some. He's hitting below 200 right now. He's kind of a key guy. Trevor Brown is another one, the guy that they really thought could hit. They expected him to have kind of a breakout season. He's hitting 133. So, you know, they've just got some guys who haven't stepped forward. Cody Regis had a big year last year. He's not hitting at all. So, you know, it's – just give them some time. That's all I'm going to say for now. I don't think there's time to push the panic button with UCLA.
Yeah, I don't think when you have Cole and Bauer, you're, I think, very, very close to being on a hot streak. Sticking with the Pac-10 here, and I mean, we talked a little bit about Cal. I just, you know, Arizona is another team that, you know, when we did the preseason rankings, I don't think I had them as high necessarily as you did. And then we were talking about it, and you kind of talked me into ranking the Wildcats fairly high. They've done nothing negative, it doesn't appear, this year. That's a team that's kind of under the radar a little bit, as under the radar as you can be in the Pac-10. But it seems like Arizona's this is a team that went to Omaha as recently as what I guess 2004-05, sometime in the Andy Lopez era. Had a very good team in 2008 that lost in the Super Regional at Miami against a loaded Miami team. What's your take on the Wildcats? Are they I don't know. I guess at number 14, they really can't be said to be coming under the radar at all.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, it does feel like people aren't talking about that team as much. I like that team. I think it's very athletic. They've got a lot of good line drive hitters. They can run. On the mound, you've got a really good 1-2 punch with Kurt Heyer and Kyle Simon, who's kind of emerged as a little bit of a workhorse on Saturdays, a sinker ball guy with some power to that sinker. And then, you know, to me, the question was who would emerge on the pitching staff after that? And Tyler Hale has done that on Sunday. He's been pretty darn good for them. They've got a fireballer in the bullpen with Bryce Bandia. It's an exciting team. You know, there's not a lot of holes there. I saw him play one time so far this year. I saw him at Long Beach State, and was pretty impressed with their athleticism on the field, their defensive ability. Alex Mejia, their shortstop, that guy can be a very exciting, spectacular player at times. He really, you know, it seems like he's been a little bit more consistent this year too, which was key for him. So, yeah, I think that's a dangerous club.
And they're even doing this again. I didn't even remember when I asked the question, but Steve Selsky, who was their leading kind of run producer the last 2 years, is injured. What, a broken hand, I guess it is?
That's right. He had a broken bone in his hand. I think he should be back for the Wichita State series coming up here in a little bit. Was the last word that I heard. But they've got enough depth on this team that they've been okay without him. You know, Johnny Field, the freshman that they really like, has played fairly well, I think. And you know, he's a talented player. But Selsky's their best. You know, he's really their best guy in the middle of the lineup. I think getting him back will be a big boost.
Yeah, to go 9-2 without your top bat is impressive to me. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. If you have questions for us any week, you could email those into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Post them on our Twitter feed @baseballamerica or obviously @AaronFitt or @JohnManuelBA. Aaron, a couple other things. The biggest riser in this week's rankings was North Carolina. We did not have the Tar Heels ranked in the preseason. You got a chance to see them the first weekend of the year, which is really their big kind of was their statement weekend when they came out there, won 4 games, including beating Cal State Fullerton. this weekend, they had a 5-0 week. They're 11-1 overall. They beat Nick Tropiano, who was the Cape Cod League hero last summer for Kituit, so a good college pitcher that they beat on Friday. What made us – I think everyone acknowledges the Tar Heels are good and they're having a good year. You wrote about in some depth on the college blog that first weekend about the depth in their bullpen, which is unusual for them. But what made us jump them, you know, 8 spots like we did this week?
Well, part of it was the teams in front of them didn't really have great weekends. Even LSU, which we moved up a few spots, you know, they lost the game on Sunday to a Princeton team that hadn't played outside yet. This was their first live action of the year, their first series. That's why we jumped them up. I mean, UNC took care of business against the Stony Brook team that had gone down to Florida Atlantic last week and won a series. And I think it's a fairly decent Stony Brook team. It's not a great team, but it's a good team for a Northeast mid-major. And UNC just obliterated them. I've been impressed with the way the freshman bats have hit. And, you know, and that's really the key for UNC this year is how guys like Holberton and Thomas Zengel and Colin Moran, you know, those guys really needed to have good seasons for them because, they lost some key parts last year. We talked a lot about Brian Goodwin being gone. They lost Dylan Hazlett and, you know, some of these other guys that were key guys for them are gone. They needed these freshmen to step forward and boy, they really hit it well this weekend.
Yeah, Colin Moran, the freshman out of Long Beach, not Long Beach, out of Long Island. He's the guy who really I knew about him. I did not anticipate that he would be hitting 4-hole for North Carolina against a fairly accomplished Friday starter in Tropiano. And then he had quality at bat after quality at bat. He probably knew some of those players on the Stony Brook team, seeing as how they're located on Long Island, and that's where they recruit a lot of their players. If the name is familiar, the younger brother, I guess, of Brian Moran?
I think he is the younger brother, yeah.
So he's another nephew of BJ Surhoff's. That's been a very good family at the University of North Carolina because BJ Surhoff was one of their best players. Brian Moran was a money reliever for them for several years, and Surhoff helped raise a lot of the money for Bosheimer Stadium, and now Colin Moran's there. And I'm telling you, Colin Moran's good. He is, I don't know how North Carolina's lineup is. You know, we'll see how it goes up through the grind of a full season when you're relying that much on so many young players. I still think they're going to miss Brian Goodwin before it's all said and done. But it was an impressive showing by North Carolina against Tropiano. They worked some counts and they adjusted. He's a fastball changeup guy, and they got to him and he had good stuff. So even though Tropiano handled Levi Michael on Friday, Michael had a big doubleheader on Saturday. So. An impressive start to the year by North Carolina team, but I doubted with the loss of Goodwin at the start of the year. Aaron, last but not least on the podcast, we talked and you had it in the chat last week about UConn and people questioning us leaving the Huskies in the top 25. Maybe the Huskies were listening to the doubters because a very impressive trip to the West Coast by UConn. And you're going to see them, I guess, later on this week, correct?
I'm actually going to see him this afternoon as well over at UC Irvine and then probably this weekend down in San Diego.
I mean, here's a team that doesn't play a home game till March 22nd, you know, when they'll take on, sports guy U, Holy Cross. I'm sure Bill Simmons will be there. But, they didn't just go out there and beat teams this weekend. They just annihilated teams. Got another great start from Matt Beetlebarns beating U Cal. I don't know if it's a little early to feel vindicated, Aaron, but you got to feel a little bit better about UConn after this weekend where they finally kind of put the pieces together.
Yeah, you know, I think they're putting it together. And yesterday they just destroyed USD. And it was Chris Jensen who started for USD who began the year as their Friday starter and has a power arm. And he's, 92-93 with a good breaking ball. And they knocked him around. George Springer had 4 hits and 4 RBIs. You know, obviously it's key for UConn to get George Springer going. And, I think this team's going to be really dangerous, as I've said before. I'm looking forward to getting a look at them against a pretty good Irvine team today, too. This could be an offensive game. These teams can both swing the bat, and I'm not sure how much pitching either has left necessarily. We'll see. I mean, it's not an offensive park, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some runs this afternoon.
Yeah, and then you're going to have another weekend series with USD for the Huskies. So, I mean, a pretty competitive weekend they've got going on. Let's look ahead a little bit to the weekend, since we're recording this podcast a day late, Aaron. Gonna be an interesting test, it seems like, this weekend. Cal State Bakersfield, One of the teams that is out there that has made some noise this year. They've won some games against ranked teams. They're going on the road to defending national champion South Carolina. Now, for those who don't know, Bakersfield is coached by Bill Kernan, whose resume is as long as anybody's in college baseball's, and then a little longer considering that he was a playwright on Broadway in New York for a couple years where he took a sabbatical from coaching. But he was a assistant coach under Augie Garrido at Cal State Fullerton, head coach at Cal State Northridge when that program was worth something, helped build the program up to when Mike Batesel took him to back-to-back regionals in the mid to late 90s. Then Bill Kernan was the pitching coach over here at NC State when they had Vern Sterry and Mike Rogers, and they, you know, had a great year, I think, in 2003, lost in a super regional at Miami. So his resume is very, very long and distinguished. And now I'm doing the job at Cal State Bakersfield. Are they for real, you think, Fitzy? Is this a Division I independent that at 11-2, they got a shot with some of these early season wins like Arizona State and UW and Washington State? They got a shot at an at-large bid?
Let me tell you something, John. I was looking back today at my notes from a conversation I had with Bill Kernan a couple of years ago, you know, before Cal State Bakersfield had actually taken the field for the first time. And he kind of said his target date was 2011. And this was the year he was recruiting a young team. He wasn't going to take the junior college route and recruit a bunch of guys to be gone after a year or two. He had a very heavily freshman class that first season. He knew they were going to take their lumps a little bit, but he really liked this class. He had some talented players, and now you're starting to see those guys mature. You know, guys like Jeremy Rodriguez and Ryan McIntyre, who are the top two hitters in that lineup. Brandon Van Dam, who was recruited as a two-way guy, but has really found his niche in the rotation. He's 3-0, great numbers across the board. I mean, this team is I think they're very interesting, and you know, they've beaten some pretty good teams. I mean, obviously Arizona State, it's a huge win for them, but then they came out this weekend and really obliterated everybody else that they played, which is more than you can say for Arizona State, which, you know, had to scratch out a 3-1-run wins after that. So, this team is very interesting, you know, and I'm gonna hopefully talk to Coach Kernan this week and have more on these guys in weekend preview.
Well, man, I know that Brandon Van Dam was a guy that our Dave Perkin doesn't work for us anymore, but, Dave was a really big Brandon Van Dam fan. I know Tommy Honschel, who beat Arizona State in that game. I may be pronouncing his name incorrectly, but the reports that we have on him are very positive. So it seems like this is a legit club. It doesn't seem like a flash in the pan. I mean, obviously you can't expect them to go and, they're not going to beat ranked teams every day because they are Cal State Bakersfield. It is a fairly new program. They have good talent. But if they go to South Carolina and even just win a game, I would imagine that's going to give them a pretty big RPI boost. And a lot of their series looking forward, Aaron, look winnable. Ohio State, Santa Clara, Northridge, all the UC schools, Davis, Riverside, Irvine. They don't have to win those whole series, but if they win a game in there, Kansas State, they play four times. Marymount's going to be tough. UCLA, Fresno, they have a schedule, Aaron, that on paper looks like the kind of schedule with this strong start they're off to, already having some quality wins. They seem like they are, it's possible for them to be an at-large team.
That's a great point, you know, and it's funny, you know, again, looking back at my notes from a couple of years ago, Kernan said, this is a job that's really exciting, and I think in 3 or 4 or 5 years, people are going to be thinking about this as a missed opportunity that they didn't take this job because, you know, I think you can win here. I thought it was a good story. I was talking to him, and I said I liked his confidence. I liked his swagger. I don't think I really bought in. Yeah, we'll see. He's off to a great start here this year.
I think he was right, but he didn't realize $7 billion shortfall in the budget in the state of California and that everybody's going to be laid off soon. So yeah. Bill Kernan's going to be working for IOU soon. So I'm making light of a terrible situation, but obviously I jest. And I wish nothing ill about the people of California. I'm just really sad about it. Aaron, looks like the marquee matchup of the weekend. It's got to be Cal State Fullerton at UCLA. I mean, not UCLA, at LSU. Or would you stay in the start of ACC country where Virginia and Clemson are going to match up?
Yeah, those are the two on the calendar that stick out, certainly. You know, I'm very eager to see how LSU handles this first challenge of the year, really, because they've played a very soft schedule so far, and Fullerton has not. You know, Fullerton's already won a series at TCU. You know, I think Fullerton is a road favorite in this series because they've got a lot better pitching, and I think their hitting is good enough to hit LSU's pitching.
I got to tell you, Aaron, the day that college baseball arrives is the day that Vegas has college baseball series lines. I'm taking Fullerton as a road dog at LSU. Oh, I can't believe they're a road dog. You know, I mean, that would just the day that Bill Simmons starts podcasting about it because he could gamble on it. That's when college baseball has arrived.
That'll be the day.
That's exactly right. That'll be the day. Now, are you going to have a chance to go see Arkansas this weekend? That's a team that's not in our top five rankings. Talk about a soft schedule. They've gone the LSU route with Utah being their best opponent thus far. But Ryan Stanek and company coming down to San Diego State to go see Aaron Fitt personal cheese ball, James Cann. You're going to get a chance to see him this weekend, aren't you?
Yeah. They'll be down there for four games, I believe, at San Diego State. So hoping to get a look at Ryan Stanek. I'm not sure exactly what their pitching rotation is going to be yet. I have to figure that out. But, I'm excited to see Arkansas. You know, I do think it's an exciting young team, very talented. I mean, we haven't ranked them yet, partly because other teams have done more. I mean, Tulane, I think, showed more by winning a road series at Ole Miss. And that Tulane thing is interesting. I chatted with Rick Jones a little bit yesterday. And, you know, he knows that they're a pitching and defense kind of team, and they can do it very well. But a little bit worried right now about some injuries. It sounds like it's probably bad news for Randy LeBlanc, who's got the best arm on the staff. And,
uh-oh,
you know, he left the game on this weekend with some pain in his elbow, and Rick Jones said he's not optimistic. He's having an MRI on Wednesday. Sounds like very bad news for the Green Wave. And Robbie Brosh didn't pitch this weekend. He's got some chronic forearm strain or something like that. He had an injection, I think, yesterday, and they hope to have him back by next week. But they at least need Brosh to be back. You know, if they have to do without LeBlanc, so be it. But fortunately, you know, Kyle McKenzie has kind of turned it around and returned to what he was when they signed him out of Massachusetts. So maybe he steps forward as the new power arm for them.
Oh, that's a bad report. That is the opposite of primo scoop. That's terrible scoop. I hate to hear that news for the because, you know, the Green Wave. I think we knew they weren't going to annihilate people, but we thought they were a team that was well suited, pitching, defense, freshmen becoming sophomores. You know, six guys who started at times last year. We thought that was a team that was going to take a big leap forward this year. And we knew they were going to play tight games. I don't think we knew they were going to play so many one-run games. But an impressive weekend series to go and win that series at Ole Miss. And that would be terrible news if their health takes a step backwards like that. Where else are you going to be around this weekend, Aaron? I don't know if you're going to get a chance to go see a lot of East Coast teams traveling to the West Coast. You got Louisville at Pepperdine this weekend.
Yes.
So you'll be over there as well?
I'm going to try to. You know, we've also got Georgia is going to be here for the Dodger Town Classic. You know, I think Sunday's games are at Dodger Stadium, so I tentatively got that on my calendar for Sunday. You know, it's going to be tough to juggle all this stuff this weekend, but it's a big weekend out here.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's already 3-8. They got Mercer this week today, which is as we're recording this on Tuesday, which is an outstanding mid-major club. They're playing a non-conference game against Alabama. I'm not sure what that's about. I need to find out. And then they have the Dodger Town Classic, and then they start the season in the SEC play at South Carolina and then against LSU. I mean, can Dave Perno pull the Bulldogs out of this? And, I mean, what are the odds of Georgia just this double-barreled tragedy off the field of Chance Veazey last year and now JT, Jonathan Taylor, with an injury this year? It looks like a serious injury. A neck injury with him. I mean, can anything else go wrong for Georgia? They just seem like they have not caught one piece of good fortune in 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a really tough stretch, you know. And boy, this Taylor thing, it's sobering, you know. Especially after 2 weeks after the Corey Hahn thing, both these cases are just really, you know, it's tough. It's tough for everyone to deal with, and I have to imagine it's got to be a distraction for the players. How could it not be? You know, I mean. We'll see how they respond to it. It's on the field, I mean, like we've talked about, it doesn't get any easier for those guys with the schedule they've got, and now they've got some real heavy baggage to deal with off the field too. So, good luck to those guys. I feel for them.
Last but not least, Darren, we got a couple podcast questions to get to. Japers, obviously friend of BA, constant chat representative. If the draft were held tomorrow, what would your top 10 look like? Aaron, the main reason I asked that question, we're not going to necessarily go through our entire top 10, but you had a chance to see Anthony Rendon this weekend in Houston. What was your take on Mr. Rendon at the top of our draft board?
Yeah, I mean, he's the best player in the country. You know, it's amazing how good of a hitter he is, how much bat speed he has. It just really stands out. Even with two strikes, he just whips that thing through. And even, you know, he changes his approach a little bit with two strikes, but, cause he'll take a really big hack early in the count. You know, he wants to hit the ball hard. He even said early in the count, I'm trying to hit the ball as hard as I can. And he's pretty good at it, but. But, you know, the guy can really hit, and he didn't get to play third base at all this weekend, unfortunately. But it doesn't sound like there's any long-term concerns about his health. He's just a really good baseball player. He's got a great presence. He's very charismatic. The scouts I spoke with, I mean, everyone still loves the guy. Everyone's still very high on him. I think he's still probably at the top of the board right there with, you know, those other pitchers, Gerrit Cole and Matt Perk. Those seem to be the top three in some order. That seems to still be the consensus.
What other top prospects that you got a chance to see include C.J. Krohn for Utah, and then John Stilson, kind of a personal cheese ball of yours, a guy that you've really been high on. What was your impression of seeing those guys in person? Start with Stilson.
Well, Stilson, you know, he pitched very well. He didn't think so because he's just such a fierce competitor. One run over six innings wasn't good enough for him. The team lost, but he pitched well.
Yeah, I love this.
His fastball, his fastball with 92, 94, and you know he's got a good changeup. He also showed a good breaking ball this weekend. I mean, I think he's the whole package. I think he could start, but I think there's a sense out there from scouts that you stick him in the bullpen, he could move really fast because he's just so well suited for that mentality, that bullpen mentality. Come out there and attack for a couple of innings. His stuff would probably even play up further. Like it has in the past, more 94, 98 in short relief. So, he's the guy that I continue to think could jump up into the top 10 is kind of a Casey Weathers type draft, you know, or one of those guys. We've seen some college relievers get drafted in the top 10 picks because they think they can move quickly and be an impact guy. To me, that's Stilson.
I love the Casey Weathers comp. That's a really good comp. And then you also just Krohn a little bit. You wrote up Alex Meyer on the draft blog, so I don't want to have you expound too much on him. But C.J. Krohn, it seems like he mashed the ball all over the place. We're going to have our intern Teddy Cahill doing a feature on the Krohn family because his younger brother is, I believe, an Arizona State signee who's a big high school senior this year, a good member of our
TCU
top 100.
TCU signee, actually.
Thank you, TCU signee. You're right. But what's your take on C.J. Krohn? We didn't get a chance to see him last summer with the USA team because he had a little banged up knee. How do you look offensively? And what do you think he's got a chance to catch?
He's a really good offensive player. You know, the guy's got huge power. He's got a very patient approach. He's just a tough out. He doesn't strike out very often. It struck me when Todd Whitting said he was the best college hitter he's ever seen. And I said, better than Rendon? And he said, better than Rendon, better than Kevin Youkilis, better than James Jurys. And he, you know, reeled off these guys. I mean, that's high praise. He's pretty special. Now, his health is an issue. He's got this labrum issue that he's dealing with in his shoulder. That's why he's not catching. I don't get the sense he's going to catch at all this year. You know, he's playing first base. Who knows? I mean, who knows the deal with that? Utah's been a little bit hush-hush about that, but we'll see. I mean, I think regardless, his bat is good enough that somebody's going to take him pretty good in the draft.
Well, the one thing is that usually is a kiss of death, but I'm just looking on our rankings. The only first baseman we have ahead of him, Aaron, would be Ricky Oropeza. You know, there are some good college first basemen in the draft this year, like a Preston Tucker or Aaron Westlake. You know, a surprise they're all in the SEC East. But this is not one of those years like 2008 where the draft's loaded with big bats at first base. That would seem like it would hurt him maybe a little bit less than other guys. If you show you can really hit, and when you have big league bloodlines like he has, that doesn't hurt. I mean, Chris Krohn's been a long time minor league manager, had a cup of coffee in the big leagues with the Angels. I don't think that kills his draft stock.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I'm not sure that people really believed he was a catcher anyway. I think, you talk to Bill Kinneberg, he'll tell you that he was coming along really good behind the plate and that he did have a chance to be a catcher. But I think the jury was still out on that. So he's a bat. That's what he is. That's his calling card.
Nothing wrong with that. And the last question, we'll wrap up the podcast with this. MojoDev1 asks, does Florida State have the pitching to support its bats? Off to a decent start, but they have Georgia Tech, Clemson, and UVA with their arms in ACC play. And, Aaron, I guess the most encouraging thing, well, first, I think we always think Florida State hits when they're at home. You know, that's just the track record. But second of all, a pretty great start for Sean Gilmartin, a guy who finished so poorly last year. But also off to a great start, a career-high strikeouts the other day for him with 11 in a game. That was his big issue last year, was finding a pitch to finish guys off. You got some depth in their bullpen. Brian Bush is pitching well for them so far. What's your take on the Seminoles? Do they seem like they're a little bit better, maybe off to a better start than maybe we thought they'd be?
No, I think they're off to about the start I thought they'd get off to, honestly. I mean, I was pretty high on this team coming into the year.
Okay.
Because it's a classic Florida State team. You know, it's an offensive team that's going to draw a ton of walks. They're going to bang the ball, over the fence to right field a little bit. And, they've got some pop. They're a very experienced team. I love the guys like James Ramsey and Sherman Johnson in the lineup, those college, really good college players that always seem to come up with big hits for those guys. And on the mound, I mean, it's veterans, that's what it is. It's Sean Gilmartin and Brian Bush and Mike McGee and, guys who've been around. We've talked before. It's not Florida's pitching staff. It's not an elite pitching staff. But it's decent college guys. And I think it's good enough with their offense and their coaching staff, certainly. It's guys who compete. And it does look like Gilmartin has taken that step forward this year. Gary Marions is the guy. I think I'm saying that name right. Who's pitched kind of come out of nowhere for me and pitched very well. He hasn't given up an earned run yet in 10 innings. I think there's some depth in the bullpen, not depth of powerful, flamethrower guys, but pretty good depth of guys who attack the strike zone and have some movement and can get outs.
Yeah, the amazing thing every year when you look at their numbers, you see something like this, and early in the season, they've already walked more than they struck out offensively. They've got 75 walks, 71 strikeouts, and on the mound, they don't walk people. It's a very simple formula. It sounds like it would be easy, but they are just so consistent as a program. Dadgummit, it just makes you love 11, that they're so consistent, and Mike Martin is so much fun to talk to.
You're right, and let me throw this out there, too. This might be the program. We talk so much about, the UCLAs and the Texases and those teams that are built around elite pitching and defense as being teams that benefit with the bat change. But this might be a program that benefits more than anybody because they can hit, first of all. They're not a team that I think is going to go into the tank offensively with the new bats. And they've got guys who throw strikes, and again, I don't think you have to throw 98 miles an hour if you can throw strikes and let the defense work behind you. And I think Florida State's defense is better than it has been in some times in recent years. I think this team, I think it's a winning formula.
Club and off to a very good start. Not a start that surprised Aaron Fitt. Maybe one that surprised me a little bit, but that's why Aaron's the expert. I'm just the host of the Baseball America podcast, the college style podcast. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us and look forward to this weekend. You got too many good games to go see and not enough time.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be hard to cram it all in, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll see some ACC action around here. We'll report back on Monday. We're going to do everything we can to get this done on Monday next week. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week. Until then, so long, everybody.